Reading this morning from Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text 39. Translation. On the disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who is the object of transcendental enjoyment for the senses of devotees, Brahma with folded hands began to recreate the universe, full with living entities as it was previously. Very interesting purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Person, listen to this first sentence carefully. It sets the tone for the whole message here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is the object for fulfilling the senses of the living entities. You ever heard any expression like that before? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is the object for fulfilling the senses of all living entities. Illusioned by the glaring reflection of the external energy, living entities worship the senses instead of engaging them properly in fulfilling the desires of the Supreme. In Hari Bhakti Sudodaya 13.2, there is the following verse. Akshinopalam pradrisha darshanam hi tanopalam tadrisha gata sangaha. Sangaha. Jiva palam tvadrisha kirtanam hi sudurlabha bhagavata hi loke. Translation. O devotee of the Lord, the purpose of the visual sense is fulfilled simply by seeing you and to touch your body is the fulfillment of bodily touch. The tongue is meant for glorifying your qualities because in this world, a pure devotee of the Lord is very difficult to find. Paragraph. Originally, the senses of the living entity were awarded for this purpose, namely, to engage them in the transcendental loving service of the Lord or that of his devotees. But the conditioned souls, illusioned by the material energy, became captivated by sense enjoyment. Therefore, the whole process of God consciousness is meant to rectify the conditional activities of the senses and to re-engage them. Prabhupada uses this phrase, re-engage, recreate, recreate, re-engage, do it again. Re-engage the senses in direct service of the Lord. Meaning, we used to do it, we stopped doing it, and now it's resuming. Just regaining our constitutional position. Lord Brahma thus engaged his senses in the Lord by recreating the conditioned living entities to act in the recreated universe. This material universe is thus created and annihilated by the will of the Lord. It is created to give the conditioned soul a chance to act, to return home back to Godhead and service servants like Brahmaji, Naraji, Vyasji, and their company become busy with the same purpose of the Lord, namely, to reclaim the conditioned souls from the field of sense gratification and return them to the normal stage of engaging the senses in service of the Lord. Instead of doing so, namely, converting the actions of the senses, the impersonalists begin to make the conditioned soul's sense less, and the Lord also sense less. That is improper treatment for the conditioned souls. The diseased condition of the senses may be treated by curing the defect, but not uprooting the senses altogether. Example, when there is some disease in the eyes may be cured to act properly. Plucking out the eyes is no treatment. Similarly, the whole material disease is based on the process of sense gratification, and liberation from the diseased condition is re-engagement of the senses to see the beauty of the Lord, hear His glories, and act on His account. Thus, Brahmaji created the universal activities again. End of purport. Antarhitendriyarthaya haraye vihitanjanihi sarva bhutamayo vishvam sasar jedam sa purvavat. Purvavat. Vat means having the quality of purva, as it was before. So it's I was thinking about this before coming down for class, that when we hear about Lord Brahma undergoing his austerities at the very, very beginning of creation when there was nothing, he hears the syllables tapa and so forth. He engages in austerity and for 100 celestial years, and Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye, he gets the realization of his own personal identity. Brahma Samhita describes he was given two mantras. One mantra was to understand his constitutional position. And what does that mean? I'm the eternal servant of God. And the second was to realize his particular rasa with the Lord in that role of servant and his spiritual identity. In the case of Lord Brahma described in Brahma Samhita, he understood his position was a maidservant. For his rasa was Madhurya rasa. The Lord Brahma that's described in the second canto, his rasa is Sakya rasa. Specifically, when the Lord received him, the Lord appeared before the whole spiritual world opened. Brahma entered. This is before he did his act of creating. And he came before the Supreme Lord. That's described in this ninth chapter of Second Canto. He came before the Supreme Lord in his yogpeet. And he saw surrounding the Lord the 9, the 16, the 5. He gives numbers, and then the purport describes personification of the personified Vedas, the personification of the 5 material elements. Pretty interesting. The 5 material elements that are gross matter have their spiritual counterpart in the spiritual world as spiritual Shaktis of the Lord. And this is but a reflection of that. So before there was a reflection, even, before Brahma had performed his act of creating, he came before the Supreme Lord, surrounded by all of his various potencies. And the Lord stood up, and he stretched out his hand and shook his hand. That's Sakya rasa. different rasa depending upon our nature. And each one of us has our particular spiritual identity and a particular rasa of so many different varieties. I mean, there are five principal and then subcategories of those five. Unlimited variety, but within those five categories. So not all Brahmas are of the same rasa with the Lord, nor are all devotees of the same rasa, because we have our dharma, we have our conditional dharma. According to guna and karma, we have our swadharma, and we act accordingly because that's what we're instructed to do, and that's what devotees do. But we're also to cultivate what this verse is describing, the sense that the personality of Godhead is really the object of our spiritual senses. Yes? And by acting in devotional service, let's go to the Paranjana story. Paranjana, fourth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. King Prachini Bhari, towards the end of the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, is met by Narada. King Prachini Bhari is in the line of Swayambhuva Manu and Uttanapada, in that line. So it's during the Satya Yuga still. King Prachini Bhari, very pious king, and he was a bit mixed in his approach to spiritual life. He had appreciation for the personality of God, but he was too much attached to fruitive activities. Mixed. Not simply a fruitive worker, performer, or karma kanda performer, but he had some liking for that. So Narada visited him, and rather than just like, you know, giving a sako punch, to say, give up all this nonsense, this is rubbish, and just take up service to Krishna. He didn't do that. He could do that. Sometimes Narada does that, but he didn't do that. What he did instead was he gave this long, several chapters long, allegorical description of a allegorical person named King Puranjana. And King Puranjana, later on, Narada unravels the whole allegory and explains the different allegorical personalities in the allegory, who they represent in real life. But it was so intriguing that King Puranjana was fascinated. Wow, this is an interesting story. Until he found out it was about him. There was this king, Puranjana, and he was a really pious king, and he was really interested in enjoying. But then there was this problem. He found he wasn't satisfied no matter what enjoyment he had. So he began searching for a queen. And he searched there, and he searched here, and he searched everywhere all around town. And he couldn't find a suitable queen. And one day, he found her. There she was in a garden. Cupid's arrow struck. She was bouncing a ball, and her hair was flowing, and oh, he was knocked off his feet. That's my queen. in the allegory, the queen represents material intelligence. Because in order to fulfill desires, which are only in the mind, very important, desires are only in the mind. If you cleanse the mind, it takes care of material desires. But if you have material desires in the mind, you need a material intelligence to fulfill those desires. You've got to have a queen. So he cozied on up to the queen, and she agreed to accept him as her husband, become his wife. And on and on, and after some time, guess what? There were some children. And so there were, he had to have a place, so he made a place. He had a fortress. And within the fortress, there were some soldiers. And the soldiers represent various things, like the senses. Now, in this allegorical description, the senses are subtle. There's gross senses, like, you know, the sense of touch, so we have a hand. Or the sense of sight, so we have an eye. But the eye is an instrument through which the sense perception capacity works. If you break the instrument or your ear, you break the instrument, you can't hear. But you can put in another instrument and then you can hear. Try to understand the point that I'm making. There's the gross manifestation and there's also the subtle. The gross is a manifestation of the subtle. So the sense of sight, the sense of smell, the sense of touch, there's the organ and there's the sense. And from the sense comes the organ. From the subtle comes the gross. That's how the unfolding of creation works. So what modern technology can do is, it's like an automobile. If you had a bad generator, you take the generator out, put another generator. Bad alternator, take the bad alternator out, put what else you want. Fuel injection, take out that system, put in another system, fix the part, and it runs. But there's something that's behind that that makes the machine run. And that's the living entity. And the living entity can make it run because he has the power of locomotion. The automobile is just an instrument. The whole automobile is an instrument of the living entity's power of locomotion. Take away the whole car. There's still the power of locomotion. Get the other way around. Because the living entity has the power of locomotion, the living entity, can make instruments for acting out that particular power. Like the power of sight. What's a telescope? It's extending the capacity of the eyes to see. So you can advance technology, send big telescopes that go off and... No, besides satellite, there's a name for a particular... Where is it? Anyway. They send... spaceships into the air with a particular... I'll think of it as I speak. A particular kind of magnifying system where they can then see things at a very, very far away distance and send images back. It's just an extension of the power of sight. That's what technology is. It's an extension of something that's more subtle. And that's advancement of science. But without the capacity of sight, those instruments aren't going to do anything. Nada in Spanish. Nothing. Nothing. So, devotional service is to recognize What's the purpose of these senses? Material society doesn't ask that question. It's understood. The purpose is enjoyment. Enjoying the senses, that's the program. And if we want a queen, we want material intelligence, what's the purpose of that material intelligence? It's to satisfy the senses. Why do we want knowledge of... It's a Hubble telescope. Why do we want knowledge of what's going on out there in the universe? So we can, you know, sell the real estate, own it and sell the real estate. Isn't it? Just like... We can go make a place and live there because we're not happy with where we are, so we want to go live there. Whether they went to the moon or didn't go to the moon, at least the pictures show they stuck in the American flag and the Russian flag. This is ours. Like colonialism all over again. So this is ours. We claim it. And then do the same thing. See what kind of minerals and resources and ship it back to America so we can, or to Russia, and see how we can exploit the resources over there to get some sense gratification. One can go on with this. How many billions of dollars are being spent in research? And what's it for? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Nanotechnology, what's it for? War games. And then once they get their little war toys and they sell it to the commercial market so they can, like, you know, all the mobile telephone program. Where did the technology of that come from? War games. So they can send their people over here and over there and just coordinate their war games. And they spend all the money to develop the technology so they can have better war games. And then they sell it to the commercial market, and everybody's walking around. Instead of talking to the person next to them, they're talking to their cell phone. Yes? I just heard one lecture where Prabhupada was describing. This is Shudra. And we're not interested. He gave the example, forget the Sanskrit word, of the snake that enters into the hole of the field mouse. The field mouse goes into the field, digs a hole, and lives in the hole. The snake goes into the hole, eats the mouse, and has a nice place to live in the hole. And he said, that's what we do. The materialists work very hard, very hard, very hard to produce things. We're not interested in producing those things. And we can use those things. Take those things and use them. He was giving the example of the microphone. We're not interested in developing more technology of how to have better microphones. They'll do it. And then we'll utilize that energy that they've generated in Krishna's service. There's a very interesting recording of one mother visiting Srila Prabhupada at Bhaktivedanta Manor, and her interest was to have her son leave the Bhaktivedanta Manor and go back to medical school. That she was very focused, and she brought along a priest like her backup support. And she was saying in flattering ways, genuine ways, Swamiji, you've done wonderful things. Your movement is great. Your teachings are great. You've done a wonderful job with my son. Now, would you please instruct him to go back to college? Because he'll listen to whatever you say. He won't listen to whatever I'll say, but he'll listen to whatever you say. And Prabhupada said, we don't need to have him go become a doctor. There's so many doctors. Yes, but Swamiji, he can serve society so nicely. He became a doctor. Don't you go to doctors? Yeah, we go to doctors. See, he can be a nice service to the devotees that go to a doctor, but there's already so many doctors. And there's so few devotees. Yeah, well, he can be a devotee being a doctor too, can't he? Just tell him, become a doctor. He'll do it. If you say it, Swamiji, he'll do it. Prabhupada wouldn't say it. Then she, you know, pulled the string and asked the priest to speak. You say something. Tell Swamiji to send my son to medical school. So the priest was saying, isn't it part of your teachings that you do good work to help other people? And from the position of being a medical doctor, you can do so much good work to help people. And Swamiji, tell the boy to become a doctor. In God's service. One can become a doctor in God's service. But Swamiji wouldn't say. So then she started getting angry and raising her voice. And the priest was raising his voice. And Swamiji was laughing. And the son was appreciating the fun. And he remained in the temple. So what do we extend our sense? Here in this verse, it's Brahmaji. And what is his service? His service is specifically inspired by the personality of Godhead. He, Brahma, is invested with the Lord's Srishti Shakti to create. He's an empowered, he's one of the Shakti Vesha avatars. Brahma is very special. He's Guna avatar and Shakti Vesha avatar in one person. So Srishti Shakti, the potency for creating, is invested in Lord Brahma. And so Brahma doesn't really have a choice because he's inspired from within his heart by the personality of Godhead to create. Not just create a product to sell in the market. A software program. He's inspired to write a software program. He's inspired to produce a family. He's inspired to create a universe with all the living entities within the universe. He's got big time desire. So he connects that desire in service to the Lord. That's what the verse is indicating. Antarhita. The Lord Antarhita. He just vanished. He disappeared. And following the Lord's disappearing, Indri Artaya, Artaya is unto, unto the Supreme Lord, he engaged his senses, Hari, to serve Hari, the personality of Godhead, who is the object of all senses. Vitanjali he, with folded hands. The Lord disappeared, and now Brahma's senses are being extended for their original purpose. The original purpose is to serve the master of the senses. The way that Prabhupada describes it here is the personality of Godhead Hari is the object of fulfilling the senses, the object for fulfilling the senses of all living entities. So that means when the Supreme Lord is satisfied, we become satisfied. The senses become satisfied. The senses find real satisfaction in that spirit of serving the master of the senses. The master of the senses, he's Atmaram. But his satisfaction is our love, not, you know, we tickle his senses and he says, oh, that feels good. Do it some more. It's not sense gratification. It's the receiving of our love, and by offering that love, our senses become satisfied. Satisfied to the degree that there is no hankering for something other. This is Param Drishtva, the higher taste. Vishaya vini vartante niraharsha dehinam rasovarjam rasopyasya pram drishtva navartate. You know this verse from Bhagavad Gita. Vishaya means sense gratification. So if one restrains the senses from sense gratification, vishaya, you restrain the senses. You don't allow the senses to go there. Niraharsha dehinam, for those who are dehi, within this body. There's deha, that's the body, and there's dehi, the one that occupies the body. For the soul that's occupying the body and just restrains the senses from sense gratification, while the tendency to try to enjoy the senses remains, it's pretense, which is addressed in the purport, to make the living entity sense less and the Lord sense less. It's not so. You can shut down the senses, but the tendency is still there. Yes? Like this description of Paranjana or the Hubble telescope. You can break the Hubble telescope, but still the tendency for seeing is there. You can puncture your eardrums. The tendency for hearing is still there. Poke your eyes out. Tendency for seeing is still there. Put yourself in a straitjacket, in a padded cell. That's what essentially what impersonalism is. Restraining the senses in some artificial way. It's artificial. Because the living entity, in its conditioned state, has material tendency. It doesn't work. For some time, you can be in a straitjacket, but how long can you sit in a straitjacket? With your eyes blinded and your mouth gagged, so you can't make any sound, you can't hear anything, can't see anything, can't move. Wow, that's really artificial. To control the senses? After some time, you want out of that situation. This happened in Russia during the communist rule. There was God is the opiate of the people, and depriving the citizens of the capacity to have resources at their disposal. So people were under control a little bit. You know, the straitjacket program worked to a certain degree, but when glasnost came, wow, those senses came out. And there was the devotees that were preaching during the Soviet time. Actually, the interest of people when they received Bhagavad Gita, no, it was clandestine. It was against the law. If you were caught distributing Bhagavad Gitas in Russia, you'd be put in, you know, you'd be in big trouble. Put in jail, maybe put out of existence. People were tortured because of their practice in Krishna consciousness. But the eagerness, the devotees that were there at the time described, one Bhagavad Gita was read by 50 people. Very quickly it got frayed because they were so eager. But then after some number of years, the interest, why? Because the senses are all over the place. Now, it doesn't mean the Russian people are no longer pious, but that piety has been polluted by sense gratification. Therefore, in spiritual life, we deliberately refrain from sense gratification, but instead engage our senses in spiritual activity. And by engaging one's senses in spiritual activity, what happens? Several things happen. The senses become purified. This is one big difference between impersonalism that tries to restrain the senses and thus realize Brahman, and devotional service that says engage the senses. By engaging the senses, at least there's opportunity. If the consciousness is right, if the understanding of the purpose behind the engagement is right, then senses can become purified. But there's also risk. When we engage our senses, the tendency of material enjoyment can come out. I'll go on Sankirtan to meet a lot of people, and hey, there's somebody with some money, and hey, there's somebody with some beautiful bodily features, man, woman, I'm attracted. Hey, I like this engagement. Go to somebody's home. Hey, I'll have some comfortable life over here. Prabhupada gave that warning that one who is, it's a duty of a sannyasi to visit people's homes and purify them by visiting their homes. But if the sannyasi is thinking, oh, this is very nice, I can enjoy over here, or maybe I'm missing out on some enjoyment over here, that's not the right mentality. Nor I'll get my maintenance this way, that's not the right mentality. So while engaging the senses, there are cautions, there are risks involved. But don't engage the senses, and there's greater risk involved. So engage the senses in service to Krishna, as Brahma did. And it's doing again that which is our constitutional position. So that's the second thing, purification of the senses and awakening the dormant consciousness of the soul through the medium of devotional service. And ultimately, developing our spiritual senses and our spiritual form. I'll give some examples from our recent visit to Vrindavan. We heard about the worship of Radha Vinod of Lokanath Goswami. Lokanath was an intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya during his Navadvip Leela. So before Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he knew he was going to take sannyas, and he knew that Lokanath was so attached to him that he wouldn't be able to maintain his life in separation from Lord Chaitanya. So he disclosed ahead of time, I plan to take sannyas, don't tell anybody. And when I take sannyas, I'm going to go to Vrindavan. So I have some personal, but you can't tell anybody, confidential service for you. I want you to go to Vrindavan and make arrangements so we can stay together in Vrindavan. Can you do that service? He didn't want to leave Lord Chaitanya, but he didn't want to say no either, because all he wanted was to please Lord Chaitanya. But such a difficult service, leave me instruction. How can I do that? But Lord Chaitanya asserted, this is my desire. It is for your welfare. And we will be together very soon. So Lokanath, without disclosing the reason, he went to every single Vaishnava in Navadvipa and fell at their feet and pleaded for their blessings that his visit to Vrindavan would be successful, spiritually fruitful. Because that was his mood. He He wanted the blessings of all the Vaishnavas. And they very eagerly gave their blessings, and so he came to Vrindavan, waiting, looking at his watch, saying, where is Lord Chaitanya? When is he coming? And he waited and he waited, and he eventually got news that Lord Chaitanya not only didn't come to Vrindavan, but he went to Puri. And after going to Puri, he went to South India. Well, for Lokanath, his life and soul was Lord Chaitanya. So he left Vrindavan looking for Lord Chaitanya. You know how far it is from Vrindavan to Cape Comorin? By foot. He walked by foot all the way. No trains, no planes, no bicycles. By foot. And when he got to South India, as he was inquiring, do you know where is Lord Chaitanya? Oh, yes. He's gone back to Puri. So quickly as he could, he got to Puri. When he got to Puri, oh, Lord Chaitanya left to Vrindavan. Went to Vrindavan. When he got to Vrindavan, oh, didn't you hear? Lord Chaitanya just left, heading back to Puri. When he was here, he was looking for you. But you weren't here. He was very disappointed. So the next morning he was planning to go to Prayag. And when he got up in the morning, in a vision, not just in a dream, but in a vision, Lord Chaitanya appeared before him and said, stay in Vrindavan. I told you to go to Vrindavan. You left. Now this time you stay in Vrindavan. And very soon, Rupa and Sanatan, who will be the bearers of my personal compassion, the fullness of my personal compassion, will come here and seek their association. That's my instruction for you. So he couldn't disobey. Although it was just a prayag, he stayed in Vrindavan on the order of Lord Chaitanya. And he moved about in the various forests of Vrindavan because he was very renounced and loved being in Vrindavan because it's the land of Krishna. And he found a very, very beautiful place not far from Barsana at a place called Katiravan and by a kund called Kishori Kund, and he made that his residence. And as he was residing there for some time, as renounced as he was very surprised that within his heart a desire for worshipping a deity started to develop in his heart. He was very surprised. Where is this coming from? He came to understand later where it's coming from. The Lord desired to have him worship him in his deity form, and so he was developing this desire. And much to his surprise, one day when Brahman came and gave him a bag and said, this is for you, he turned around and left. He looked in the bag and there's deity of Radha Vinod. And he was thinking, oh no, better watch what you desire in Vrindavan. Because here's this deity form. But how am I going to worship the deity form? So he set the deities on something, a wooden stump or something, and they spoke to him and said, my name is Radha Vinod, and I've come here because I want you to worship me. And he said back to the deity, but how can I do that? I don't have anything. I'm living in the forest. I don't have any place to put you. I don't have anything to offer you. And Radha Vinod spoke again, I'm hungry. Feed me. Make some arrangement quickly. So he did. He found whatever forest edibles and roots and berries and made an offering and offered it to Radha Vinod. And then he made a bed out of soft leaves and laid Radha Vinod down to rest. And then with large leaves, he stitched them together with little twigs and made a nice fan so he could fan. Because in Vrindavan it gets hot sometimes. So he would fan the deity and put them to rest and feed them and sing for them and worship them just as he would do in his spiritual form. Because Lokanath Goswami, in his spiritual identity, was an intimate Manjari associate of Srimati Radharani. So, although he was using his material senses with material objects, it was an enactment of his spiritual identity as Leela Manjari, intimate associate of Radha. Or Sanatana Goswami, because of the time, I won't narrate the whole thing, but it's so attractive that one of the wonderful pictures you see, wherever you, almost any place where you see a temple or samadhi or bhajan kutir of Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, there's the picture of Sanatana Goswami as a sadhu extending some chapati or some baked wheat to his deity, Madan Mohan. Because of that intimate exchange where Madan Mohan disclosed to the pujari who was worshipping Madan Mohan, as Sanatana Goswami was traveling about Braja doing Madhukari, from within his heart the Supreme Lord directed Sanatana Goswami to that very home. And that the night before, the pujari was told by Madan Mohan, in the morning, one sadhu is going to come to your home. He will be asking for alms as Madhukari. I want you to give him to him to worship me. In his dream. Next morning, Sanatana Goswami comes to his home, performing Madhukari. So the pujari disclosed, see Madan Mohan, he wants you to take him home and worship him. And Sanatana Goswami had said, I don't even have a home. Nor do I have anything to worship him with. Nor do I have the spiritual qualification. I can't accept that. I can't. I have to say no. But he was feeling very conflicted, because how can you say no to the Supreme Lord? He left feeling disturbed. So then he came back the next morning and said, I have to accept, because this is the will of the Supreme Lord. But my dear Lord, I have nothing to offer. And the Lord said, that's all right, whatever you have to offer, I'll accept. So later when he was making, they have this practice in Vrindavan of they take wheat and grind the wheat and make wheat flour, mix it with water, put the two together and make balls. Put the balls in the coals and you get wheat bread instead of chapati. If you don't have a rolling pin, just make wheat balls. And he would offer those to the deity. And one time the deity said, this is very nice, but can't you put a little salt? I told you, I don't have anything. You said you would, okay. But if some salt comes your way, then you can offer some salt too. And some salt came his way. Well, the salt merchant came and made some offering of salt. And that same salt merchant built the temple for Madan Mohan. And so many examples like that, personal exchanges between devotees that are just engaged in some service. But because the Lord is a person, and their consciousness is the making with love an offering to the Supreme Lord. The senses become purified. Their dormant attraction for the personality of Godhead awakens through that medium of making loving offerings.
through the Lord.
And ultimately their spiritual form becomes manifest. Their svarup. Through the medium of devotional service. So that's what Brahma is doing here. The medium is devotional service. And through the medium of devotional service, he's realizing not only his constitutional position as the eternal servant of Krishna and feeling very satisfied that his senses are now properly engaged, re-engaging in the loving service of the Lord, but his own spiritual form becomes disclosed through the medium of devotional service, not something extraneous. We don't need some gimmick or some esoteric something or other. Through the medium of devotional service itself, that's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's teaching. Specifically, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur taught that combining our devotional service with the mood of preaching Krishna consciousness or extending this mercy that Lord Chaitanya came to give to others through that medium of extending the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya, our spiritual identity can be understood. I'll share one last thing with you. This is a comment from Srila Prabhupada about our Sankirtan activity. Once Rameswar, who was in charge of the BBT and the GBC for Los Angeles Temple, who was a super enthusiast for book distribution, he asked Prabhupada, is it the right understanding that when the devotees are engaged in the Sankirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that they're actually preparing themselves and entering into the intimate pastimes like this Rasa Leela picture depicted up here on the wall? Prabhupada said, you are very intelligent. You have understood correctly. So we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, for example, that this is only 500 years ago, 500 plus years ago, that when the devotees with Lord Chaitanya were engaged in Harinam before the Rath Yatra cart of Lord Chaitanya, or the Sankirtan pastimes at the house of Srivas Thakur, it was the Gaura Leela of the Krishna's Leela of engaging in Krishna engaging with all of his associates in very, very confidential pastimes like this. Or when Lord Chaitanya exhibited during the Sankirtan of Rath Yatra, dancing and chanting in such a way with each of the devotees so that they were thinking, Krishna is simply attached to me and looking at me alone. Likened very much to the pastime when Krishna was taking lunch with the cowherd boys. And the cowherd boys were thinking, each one of them, Krishna is attached to me, he's looking at me only. The recreation of Krishna's Leela in Gaura Leela is allowing the facility of experiencing Krishna, because Lord Chaitanya is none other than Krishna. He's Krishna. He's not an avatar of Krishna. He's Krishna. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. And through the medium of Lord Chaitanya's merciful Sankirtan pastimes, we can engage in assisting or directly participating in the Lord's Sankirtan pastime. And same, our senses are becoming engaged in their constitutional activity. While it may be something that's very familiar to us, singing and dancing, for example, or studying and speaking, hearing and chanting, very common activities that we're all quite familiar with. But the seed inside is the spiritual activity. And if our consciousness becomes directed toward Krishna by that process, our senses are becoming purified, our spiritual attraction for Krishna is being awakened, our spiritual form is being developed. So that when chakpaturnam, when we give up this body, that Krishna consciousness carries the soul to the spiritual world. That's our program. Our back home, back to Godhead program. In seemingly ordinary activities. Our program isn't recreating the universe, but our program is recreating the Sankirtan pastimes of Lord Chaitanya through the medium of chanting the holy name. It's just like we're going to be observing the Govardhan Puja today. Is it, you know, an outside person, how will they look at it? This is really an interesting ritual. They build this big hill and walk around the big hill. And very interesting ritual. How silly. If we do in the right consciousness, it's the same thing that Brahma is doing, because this is what's enjoined for us to do by our founder Acharya. And so we do faithfully. And it's purifying. It's doing the same thing. We don't have the capacity to build a universe and populate with all the varieties of living entities. We don't have that capacity. We have the capacity to build the Govardhan Hill and circumvent it and glorify Krishna. And if we remember Krishna in that original circumambulation of Govardhan Hill, Krishna did himself. And he said to the residents, this hill is the Supreme Lord, Hari. And specifically, Shukadeva Goswami says, to convince the Brijvasis that he wasn't just a child speaking silly talk, he manifested Haridev, who ate all of their offerings, then asked for more. If we enter into these activities of devotional service with a faithful heart, we can experience the spiritual world and our own spiritual identity through that medium of devotional service. That's what this verse is describing by the example of Lord Brahma. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions from anyone?
Hare Krishna, in the Damodar Leela pastime, in the presentation, we saw that at the end of the Leela, the Nalakuvera trees, they get liberated. That is through the mercy of Narad Muni and Krishna to fulfill the desire of his devotee. He gives them the benediction of pure devotional service and says that they would always remain in that platform. But if I were to look at the past life, it doesn't indicate that they were the devotees of Krishna, they were devotees of Shiva. So,
it's like, they became devotees of Krishna.
But how does that happen? Were they?
By the mercy of Narada. Have you ever found devotees of Shiva become devotees of Krishna? I've seen it. How does that happen? By the mercy of a devotee. That happens. Their father was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, Kuvera. So they were followers of, like their father was. But they obviously weren't following very closely. So in name, but not in spirit. But by the association of Narada, they became devotees of Krishna. And they could understand not just by sentiment, but by factual understanding. Their prayers indicate they understood factually who Krishna was and became his devotee.
But what were they precisely doing those 100 years as Brahmaji was doing his service austerities? Were they doing some austerities as priests?
What'd you say? They were certainly doing austerities while in the tree body. Try it. With half your body under the ground. Boy, we made a big mistake over here. Krishna, please come. It's not just the austerity. It's the association of Narada. What austerity did Kaliya do? He just got Krishna's feet dashed on his head. But by that association, he became purified. Something over here? Can you get the microphone?
Hare Krishna. Yesterday you were speaking about the Chatushloki Bhagavatam. That Chatushloki Bhagavatam was spoken at the beginning of creation or it's every day of Lord Brahma?
The indication of this verse specifically, the one that we just discussed, is the event that's somewhere in the midst of the creation, not at the very beginning of creation. So that would seem to imply it happens each day. However, the Bhagavatam is not stuck or confined to that kind of logic, or this implies that, like there's with some limitation. Rather, Shukadeva Goswami describes in different times different things, different appearances of the Lord, as if they're in the same lila. He's not restricted like that. So there's no specific indication. It would seem, so this isn't conclusive, but it would seem it's at the beginning of creation. But then, could be each day of Brahma also. It's not conclusive. There's no disclosure here. Yeah.
You said about that not simply engagement of physical senses, but our consciousness has to be involved in our service. So sometimes we do our service, but because we have to finish that service by that time, so we run and we do our service not putting full consciousness. So what is the result of such service?
The result of service that's done not fully attentively and not with full love, Krishna accepts because there's some sacrifice and some offering, but the effect isn't the full effect of realization and or purification. But there's some effect, there's some benefit. Especially just as the very nature of your question, there's some feeling that this shouldn't be like this. From wishing to improve. So that spirit of wanting to increase the quality of the offerings and the service that we render, that's Krishna reciprocates with that as well. Yes, in the back. Way in the back.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, my question is, as the senses are subtle and gross, even the sense objects are also subtle and gross.
Yes.
And when a person explains pleasure and pain.
When person does what? Experiences pleasure and pain.
Pain. The happiness and the distress, or is there in the sense object or it is in the senses?
It's in the mind.
That means, like it's because of karma one experiences this.
What was the last part?
Is it because of karma a person experiences in the particular sense object the pleasure and pain?
No. It's according to a karma that one will experience contact with a particular object of the sense, but the reading, this is pain or this is pleasure, it's in the mind. And that can be adjusted. It's not karmically bound. But in the conditioned state, the orientation of the mind is also guna and karma. But it's not necessarily. You know, let's take Prahlad Maharaj, for example. What he was subjected to was torture. But he was not feeling, oh, I'm being tortured. He wasn't feeling any of that. Because of his constant remembrance of the personality of Godhead. Or Haridas Thakur, when he was being beaten in 22 marketplaces with hard sticks, he wasn't feeling anything. It was the big, powerful officers, they were getting worn out. And he was just chanting the whole day. But, you know, so it's not, it must be, you know, the suffering, you know, a particular circumstance. In conditioned life, the answer would be yes. But even that can change. Just like, you know, if we're going along and let's say it's very hot out or very cold. But if someone who, just even a worldly thing, someone who you care for very much comes unexpectedly to your home to visit you, you forget everything about the heat or the cold and just absorbed in that relationship with that person because of that excitement, to that, you know, mental activity connecting with something enjoyable. The other thing is just forgotten. I went to a doctor's office in America because I had developed some kind of a skin rash from the heat, from ultraviolet light. So I went, and it was just sitting there in his office, and he has all these little slogans and things all over his wall, and I just was waiting and waiting and waiting, and so I was looking at those things and said, you know, why do you do this? Then he explained. He said that medical science has shown if the mind is distracted, then it won't feel the same pain. So my patients are in here because they're in pain. But otherwise, they wouldn't come here. If I give their mind something to do, take their mind off the pain, they'll feel better. Is that karmic or what? I mean, it's just a law of nature. But if someone is, by mode of nature, so much absorbed in the mode of ignorance, they can't think of anything other than their body and what their body is feeling, pleasure or pain.
Hey, Shyamala. My question is related to yesterday evening class.
Related to?
Yesterday evening class,
okay.
Like, Maharaj Parikshit, during his time, most of the people, they were spiritually enlightened. So even though that situation, everything was favorable, he was put into illusion to do that mistake,
yeah.
Like putting snake around that. But present situation is completely, like as you told, like it's completely degraded condition. But this situation, it's very, very difficult to practice devotional service. Like that I'm feeling. But
it's more difficult to not practice devotional service than to practice devotional service.
Yes, Maharaj. Sometimes I'm thinking, living examples are there, so many pure devotees Prabhupada has created by his teachings. When I'm thinking, pure devotees are representative of Krishna. If I'm also follow those instructions, I also can become pure devotee. When I'm hearing, I'm getting this confidence. But sometimes I'm thinking, if I want to become like them, just so it is like minimizing their positions. So I'm losing confidence.
If you want to become like what?
Like pure devotee.
Okay.
So I'm thinking like just I'm minimizing the position of pure devotee if I feel like that. I don't know.
You want to know if it's possible in this age of Kali to become a pure devotee? That's your question?
Yeah. Is it possible to become pure devotee?
Yeah.
How?
And last, okay, take the microphone from him because he might want to jump in and say something else. I explained that last night. When the theme at the very beginning was how to take the maximum benefit from Srimad Bhagavatam. How to be like Maharaj Pariksit. And so many things were described, but the punchline, the conclusion was, by, just like you said, when hearing, I feel something. So hear regularly. And you feel something regularly. And you hear with great eagerness, and it'll go more deeply, and that will displace the other everything. And it'll then become embedded in your heart. And you'll carry that with you all the time. What happens outside may be the same, but what happens inside will be altogether transcendental. Because of that, the Bhagavat method, the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavat Dharma method is by hearing. And that enters, and you know, when the light's on, there's no darkness. Although we're in the age of darkness, we can move through the field of Kali Yuga and be illumined within the heart by the process of hearing. Is it possible? Absolutely. Otherwise, it's just a trick. Shukadeva Goswami was cheating us. No. And all the acharyas that commented on Bhagavatam is just a trick. No. It's specifically the incarnation of Krishna. After Krishna, one of the questions in chapter 1, canto 1, the last of the six questions is, now that Krishna has left, where are religious principles finding their shelter? The answer is, after Krishna left, shortly thereafter, the moon, as brilliant as the sun, arose on the eastern horizon in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, giving the same illumination as the sun of Krishna, which set on the western horizon, just after, giving cooling and soothing light. And where there is that light, how to lead our lives. Even it's Kali Yuga, there's light in this darkness. There's shelter. There's safety. There's the channel for perfection, if one takes it. So you say it's hard. I say it's more hard to not. Choose your battlefield. Daivihi eshu gunamai mama maya duratyaya. That's choice A. Mama eviye prapadyante maya mitam tarantite. That's choice B. I know which one I want to choose. And whatever effort is required from my side to do that one, I'm ready. And the reciprocation with Krishna is very noticeable, perceivably, palpably sweet. And that's really what keeps us going, is that experience, not just intellectually knowing, but experiencing reciprocation with Krishna. Conversely, were we to not do that, Kali Yuga would be advancing much more rapidly. This is holding back, staving off the onslaught of Kali Yuga. This chanting of the holy name and hearing of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Were that not to be there, the deterioration would be far more rapid. To take shelter. Yes. Over on the lady's side. Raise your hand so he brings you the microphone. I can't hear you. You have to put the button on.
Good morning, sir.
Can't hear you.
Everything in spiritual world is personal and individual. And I cannot understand this impersonal feature of Brahman when you describe this Advayam. How can this impersonal feature, we can understand it as personal and individual?
You got it? In the spiritual world, everything is personal. You're not able to understand
impersonal feature of absolute.
Impersonal feature. Impersonal feature is an aspect of a person. It's the effulgence of the person, Krishna. So everything in the spiritual world, as you said, is personal. And of a fully spiritual nature is also the localized feature of the Supreme, which is found in this world as Paramatma. And in the spiritual world, where we happen to be presently, that is, in the vastness of the spiritual sky, there's a cloud of the material energy, which is where we are right now, in that cloud of the material energy. But we're also situated in the spiritual sky, that jyoti is the effulgence of the Supreme, who is personal, and this effulgence feature is his sat, or existential feature, or impersonal feature. It's part of him. It's his effulgence. It's not separate from him. And he is personal. Think of it that way. Okay, I'm going to end because it's 10 o'clock. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.